Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, the story of the assassination of a top Hamas operative in the glittering Gulf city state of Dubai unspools a little more every day. We're now up to 27 agents who allegedly drifted into Dubai and gathered like a noose around one Mahmoud al-Mabhou, a low-profile but apparently key arms smuggler for the Palestinian group Hamas. On January 20th, he was found dead, smothered or electrocuted or both. But the story is very much alive. Israel won't confirm or deny involvement. Dubai says Israel did it and has rolled out the videotape. This hour On Point, a killing and the fallout from Dubai. You can join the conversation. What do you make of this story? Is assassination the way to go? What if the tables were turned? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. You can see some of the Dubai surveillance video of the alleged plot at our website, onpointradio.org. Joining me now from Tel Aviv is Ronan Bergman, senior intelligence and military analyst for Israel's largest circulation daily newspaper, Yediot Aharonot. He also hosts a daily current affairs show on Israel's Channel 1 TV, Erev Hadash, and is author of The Secret War with Iran. Ronan Bergman, thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for inviting me.
There's a lot on the record. We'll talk about what's off the record now. But as for what Dubai has alleged in some quite extensive briefings of the press on this, can you walk it through us, Ronan? What is Dubai saying happened here?
This is an unprecedented and I would say quite surprising achievement from the Dubai police. Basically, they're saying there are 27 members of the hit squad, which they identified, using German, French, British, Australian passports. Most of them, passport belonged to Israeli citizen of dual citizenship.
Dual citizenship. But these were not actually these dual citizens who were there in Dubai, apparently.
Same passport, different photograph. Now, they were used, some of the members of the hit squad, according to the statistics or the information given by the Dubai police, some of them, for example, someone called Michael Bodenheimer, using a German passport, came from Frankfurt as early as November 9th, heading the first team of surveillance. There was another visit in December, maybe a surveillance of following up al-Mabhou, who was at the same time in Dubai, or making a decision not to kill him at that time. The members of the hit squad came again in January from different locations, all of them carrying prepaid Austrian phone cards and prepaid American credit cards. As documented by the records of the cell phone network and the surveillance cameras from 8 different locations, which the Dubai police was able to corroborate, and this is highly, highly impressive and not a given. It's not elementary to corroborate this sort of information. They tried to hide the relations between them, but it's very clear that they belong to the same intelligence team doing something. They use all sorts of disguises in the passport, all being photographed smiling and with glasses. This is the methods to deceive the face recognition systems. And they are coordinating, they're following up al-Mabhou, who enters Dubai on January 18th, as I recall, following him up to the hotel, making sure that nobody is following him and that nobody enters the floor, then breaking into his hotel room, drug him, and according to the forensic issued today by the police of Dubai, strangle him while he is being drugged. And then all of them leaving the country to different locations, some to Hong Kong, some even to Iran, leaving no trail, or thinking they'd leave no trail, but leaving so many marks. This is the end of an era of a traceless assassination. They thought that he's going to be found dead, thinking that it was a heart attack, but the Dubai police was not convinced it's a heart attack. He was found 2 days afterwards. He used, al-Mabhou was using a false passport, and only days after, the Dubai police, while quarreling with the Hamas leadership in Gaza, in Damascus, find out that he's a high representative of Hamas, coordinating shipment of arms from Iran to Gaza, and then starting, the Dubai police started the inquiry, which led to the solving of the case and the impressive detailed story as we hear them now.
With all the video, with the faces of the 27 agents all over the world at this point, and just to be very clear, though, a lot of these passports appear to have been modeled on the passports of actual Israelis with dual citizenship. Those dual citizens have come forward, a bunch of them, to say this was not us. Nobody thinks it was them. The Dubai head of police is saying this is Israeli Secret Services work here. Of course, Israel won't confirm or deny. Ronan, stand by for just a moment if you'd be good enough. I've got a little tape here. This is from just this weekend. This story is still unfolding. And here is CNN's Christiane Amanpour interviewing Israeli Defense Minister Ehud Barak on Sunday. She asked him point blank several times about the Dubai assassination. Here's his response.
I have nothing to say about this story. I have nothing to say, and I will not say.
Would you deny it?
I will not say anything.
You believe, though, in targeted assassinations? Israel, there's the famous one back in Jordan.
Next interview, you can ask me about it. If I will answer this right now, I will implicitly answer your question. I say I do not have anything to say about this.
I will not say anything, says the Israeli defense minister. And Ronan Bergman, here's one more piece of tape. The head of the Dubai police you're referring to, this is Dahi Khalfan Tamim. He was asked on Dubai media television if the Israeli secret service Mossad was behind the assassination. He said the evidence was pretty clear. Suspects had various Western passports when entering Dubai, he said, but they all left for the same country after the killing. Well, we'll talk about that. But here he is in Arabic, and I'll give you a sense of what he's saying. The head of Dubai police saying they all left for Israel and are now in Israel. I don't think that this was, for example, the group of Peace Now in Israel who did it. A little joke, I guess, he's telling it. It must have been the agency in Israel that serves for assassinations. They are the head of Dubai's police. Ronan Bergman in Tel Aviv, what's the sense in Israel? Is it assumed that this was indeed Mossad?
I think that now everybody, though Israel doesn't admit it and will never admit it, everybody believes, and this is the important question, it's not just if the street in Israel, but everybody, including the countries of which from which the passports came, all of them believe, and some very agonized and very furious with Israel for using or misusing their passports. And I think that if Israel was behind that, someone has miscalculated the risk and the abilities of the Dubai police, which led to this huge diplomatic blunder that would still haunt Israel for many, many years from now.
You think it's a diplomatic blunder? I mean, he's been identified as having been involved in the kidnap and murder of Israeli soldiers back in 89. Israel and even Hamas say today he's had been engaged in smuggling arms from Iran into Gaza. In spite of all that, you would see it as a blunder?
No, I would say this. This Al-Mabkhouh was a central kingpin in what Israel perceived as one of the main security challenges to its national defense. And these are the interlinks between Iran and Hamas. Al-Mabkhouh himself admitted to an interview in Al Jazeera that he kidnapped and killed two Israeli soldiers, and then that he was major part in the maneuvering of armed sophisticated weaponry from Tehran to Gaza. From the point of view of Israel, to take him out is a reasonable and vital and has no doubt in the internal discussion in the intelligence community and the public. From the point of view of the world, and the fury and the damage to relations between Israel and to other countries, without connection to the question of whether Israel was or was not behind that, but because these countries are convinced that Israel was behind that, I'm not sure that it's worth the life of even such a senior operative of Hamas with all the bad things that he has done.
And what about strictly as an intelligence operation? This is your specialty. Mossad has had, though with blunders historically as well, but it's had a reputation as, you know, pretty excellent at intelligence operations, and yet here are 27 agents on videotape. Is just as an operation, does it look, the result may have been desired, but does it look like a good operation?
The the last 5 years has suggested a recovery of Israeli Mossad in a numerous successful operation, a tribute to Mossad, the assassination of Imad Mounia, the supreme military commander of Hezbollah, bringing the evidence and the intelligence that led to the raid on the Syrian nuclear reactor, delaying the Iranian nuclear project. There are numerous successful operations. Maybe an organization that enjoyed the great honor by the Israeli public and enjoyed series of success did not learn the lessons, even from successes, and to some extent would sick with the sin of hubris. These agents going into, there are big film there, one of them going into a hotel room in Dubai, bold, coming back out just a minute afterwards with hairy head. This is a sense of euphoria from the alleged members of the hit squad. And I think that someone miscalculated the abilities of the other side, the adversary, Mr. Khalfan, the head of the police of Dubai, and made a wrong calculation. Now, the main question to be asked now is what was presented to the one that needs to give the authorization to such operation in Israel, and this is the prime minister, were all the risks given to him? And if so, did he make the right decision to send the alleged members of the Hizkwad?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the assassination in Dubai of a high-placed Hamas leader, killing widely perceived to have been carried out by Israel, and its effect, its after effect, its long reverberation through the region and beyond. We've been joined from Tel Aviv by Ronan Bergman, senior intelligence and military analyst for the largest daily circulation newspaper in Israel, also a big figure on Israel's Channel 1 TV and the author of The Secret War with Iran. We're going to hear in just a moment from another pretty clued-in voice. Let's hear some of the voices responding in Israel and elsewhere in the world since the assassination. After meeting with European officials last week, where there's been a lot of pushback and unhappiness over the use of passports from that continent and beyond, Israel's Foreign Minister Avigdor Lieberman dismissed questions from reporters about whether Mossad had carried out the assassination. He gave a kind of colorful response.
I think that you saw too many movies about James Bond, and I prefer you to see more movies.
The Israeli foreign minister. The British Foreign Secretary, David Miliband, was asked by the BBC if the British government was just going through the motions of an investigation around the killing to protect its ally Israel.
We think it's right to have the full investigation that the Prime Minister has launched. We think it's right to make clear to Israel that we want them to cooperate with that inquiry. That is not going through the motions. That is the rightful business of government when it comes to dealing with serious issues and working with close allies.
And Australia's Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, said last week that his country was disturbed by the details of the apparent assassination plot.
If Australian passports are being used or forged by any state, let alone for the purposes of assassination, this is of the deepest concern.
Deepest concern, says the Australian Prime Minister. Ronan Bergman in Israel, please stand by if you would. Joining us right now from Washington is Paul McGill. He's chief correspondent, former editor for Australia's Sydney Morning Herald. He's done extensive research into the inner workings of Hamas and the Israeli intelligence services, in particular the 1997 Israeli attempt on the life of another Hamas operative. He wrote a book about that called Kill Khalid, the failed Mossad assassination of Khalid Mashal and the rise of Hamas. Paul McGill, thanks very much for joining us.
Hello, Tom.
What do you see in this Dubai killing?
Well, there's something for everyone in it. There's fascination for world audiences when an organization like the Mossad, which ordinarily conducts itself in an exemplary manner as an intelligence agency, messes up to the extent that they have messed up here. But put that to one side, because Israel does have a body on a slab, and that was the objective.
Mm-hmm.
Very little attention has been paid to another windfall out of this for Israel, which will play out. It'll bubble in the background for some time, and that is what appears to be the role of three Palestinians, who assisted Mossad in this hit in Dubai. Two of these Palestinians are in detention in Dubai. They've been handed over by the Jordanian authorities.
The only two out of the 27 who are in custody, as far as we know.
That is correct. Now, these people have been named as being former employees of the security forces attached to the Palestinian Authority. That's the authority run by Mahmoud Abbas, the Fatah secular half of the Palestinian political equation, which is at loggerheads with Hamas, going into a forthcoming election campaign at some time in the near future. The notion that agents of the U.S. Israeli-backed government of the Palestinian people, if you like, were helping in the killing of a Hamas agent in the field, brings out that very ugly charge of collaboration. It's something that Fatah, Mahmoud Abbas, and others are going to have great difficulty countering. It's an ugly little wart that we'll see surface in time.
But, of course, Fatah and Hamas have plenty of their own conflict here. And when you say messes up, you and Ronan Bergman are kind of in the world of intelligence. It may not be as clear to those outside it what the mess up is here. Exactly what do you mean, Paul?
Well, the mess is when an intelligence agency operates properly and by the book, the best message they can leave after an operation is a body on a slab and a whole lot of people guessing. The message gets through to the people who need to get the message, and here I'm talking about Hamas, the Hamas leadership. You don't want the whole world sitting back looking at 27 minutes of pretty Monty Python-esque video that has been put on YouTube by the Dubai authorities.
These are agents in tennis outfits and wigs and glasses on and off and bald and hairy, as Ronan says.
Yes, yes, it's quite absurd. And there's wonderful moments where you see people who think they're being such clever Mossad agents nipping into a restroom in guise A and emerging with guise B with a new beard or a new wig on their head. I mean, this is quite absurd stuff. This is not what feared and respected intelligence agencies are about.
Does it take these 27 agents or 25 minus the two in custody? Does it take them out of work for Mossad? Do they lose an important asset here?
There's a claim out of Israel in the last 48 hours, which may be face-saving, arguing that the photographs that have been published, those that were in the passports, had in fact been doctored, and that therefore the 27 have not been taken out of business. I don't think Israel will be sending any of them overseas for some time to come.
Ronan Bergman, in Tel Aviv, this last weekend was the Purim holiday in Israel. It's a holiday when people have fun in costumes. And we're reading here that lots of Israelis actually dressed up like the Mossad agents on video in Dubai. Humor may be a sign of support, I would think, as the operation broadly had Israeli public support.
Yes, Tom, I was joining, not in a Mossad costume, some of the parties, and the most popular one was of a tennis player. And I think that this white sport has never enjoyed such a leisure and glory time in Israel. And this is only because the alleged hit squad was wearing this costume. I think that like a national basketball team for Israelis win a European contest, or a soccer team, or the Eurovision song competition. This is a national pride, and the numbers of people applying through the website of Mossad, the official website, has been grown rapidly in the last few days, and I think it shows the great support that Israel still sees in its armed forces and intelligence foreign networks, and even in the use of assassinated killings. I just want to add one word about the Palestinian being arrested. This sort of operation, if Mossad was behind it, or the past experience with Mossad, are titling this sort of operation as a blue and white operation. This is the code name, which means that it is done, blue and white are the colors of the flag of Israel, which means it's being done only by Israelis, by Israeli agents. It doesn't mean that there are not Palestinians in the outer circles of collecting information and intelligence, and these Palestinians that were arrested might be included. But even if they are connected, even if they speak, even if they admit full cooperation with Mossad. This is not yet the smoking gun that the police of Dubai is looking for, because they would have no connection to the perpetrators, no connection to the actual assassination. And for the time being, in spite of numerous promises from the police of Dubai, promising intercepts of phone calls, etc., they don't have a direct proof, a direct thing that any evidence connecting the perpetrators to the assassination or to the Israeli Mossad.
Dubai is saying that it has DNA evidence. Of course, they've tracked some of the paperwork here, the bank, the credit cards you referred to, I think a bank out of Iowa in the United States, and then phone cards and the rest. Paul McGill in Washington, Ronan is describing what sounds like a victory for Mossad at home, at least.
Well, how the world looks from Israel quite often is not how the world looks from elsewhere in the world.
I agree completely.
I think it's one thing for people to be celebrating in costume in Israel, but I don't think government ministers from Israel enjoy waking up this morning and reading that their passport travel might not be as secure as it is when they travel to Britain, as the British government has warned this morning, that they might be subject to a greater testing of who they are when they're coming through. And if any fringe lobby group is demanding investigations for crimes against humanity and the rest of it, that they could well be investigated. I don't think when they woke up in the weekend and read reports out of the UN that Australia had, for the first time in a long time, abstained from a vote where ordinarily it would have been expected to support Israel. They would have enjoyed that. One of the key diplomatic objectives of the Israeli diplomatic corps is to keep all the votes, as many votes as they can, running Israel's way at the United Nations. And when governments like Australia start straying off after they have been insulted, as they have been in this exercise, I don't think that's a win.
It's going to call from
at the end of the day, all the key allies will fall back into place, but they're going to belt Israel around for a while on this. They'll enjoy it.
Let's get a call from Des Moines, Iowa. Dave, you're on the air.
Hello. I was wondering if this team, whoever they were, gamed all of us, looking clownish as they did, and seeming to be Mossad, but could have been anybody. Could have been former KGB, could have been CIA, could have been Blackwater. And the cover, which you would need when you're operating out in front of cameras, would be to look like somebody else. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Dave, thanks. Ronan, clowning for the camera is a kind of a, you know, double disguise here. What about that possibility?
Well, I'm quite sure that, and it's very clear from the videos, that the people joining this team knew that there are many surveillance cameras and are taking some precautions with the tennis clothes, wigs, moustaches, etc. I think what they did not expect is the, I would say, quite a surprising ability of the police of Dubai to corroborate information from 8 different visual sources, put everything in one database, corroborate this, and put this in corroboration with every feed, all the feeds coming from the records of the cell phone, and then creating the pictures. The problem is not collecting some video footage from the hotel, the problem is making this in the same timeline with information coming from the airport or the shopping mall or other hotels. So they are not cloning. I think they took this into consideration, but they didn't see the overall picture. And I completely agree with Paul that the people in Israel, people who are dealing with international affairs, are in great embarrassment into this huge blunder. If I can just give one historical example, in 1984, a courier of Israeli intelligence left a bag with a false British passport in a phone booth in Germany. And this caused huge rage from the Her Majesty government. The British were ballistic with Israel. And this caused to not a overt damage, but a covert damage to the intimate intelligence relations between Israel and Britain that lasted for many, many years. So on the judicial phase, I think that the police of Dubai is going to a deadlock, because they would not be able to find anyone to compare to the DNA profile they have. Mm. They will not be able to bring anyone to justice. But on the intelligence level, on the intelligence relations with Israel in other countries, we are going to witness a long-lasting damage.
Paul, is this real rage? I mean, in the movies, spies use passports from all over the place all the time. Are countries really so surprised, shocked when it happens in this Dubai case?
They are shocked. They are shocked. In investigating the attempted assassination of Khaled Mashal, in which the Mossad used Canadian passports.
This was Amman, Jordan, and a mess, which you wrote about. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Khalid. That's correct, mm-hmm. In 1997. Now, the way a Canadian diplomat explained it to me was that the Mossad takes a passport issued in the name of Fred Nurk from Canada, uses it in an episode like this, that's revealed, the name is published, the associates of the target get the name, and every Fred Nurk who lives in the city of Winnipeg runs the risk thereafter of answering a knock on his door and opening the door to a gunman who wants to blow him away. Passports are valued, precious documents that facilitate the travel of nationals of all countries around the world. A lot of them do business in the Middle East. It's a scary business, and this is the sort of thing that infuriates governments. Their hands are tied to the extent that they have long-standing relationships with Israel, but they take it out on Israel in ways that we may or may not see in the aftermath.
Let's get a call from Shira in Newton, Massachusetts. Shira, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you, Tom?
Well, what do you think, Shira?
Well, I really don't understand the outrage of the world, frankly. Certainly, the United States has carried out targeted killings. This was a known murderer, a terrorist who acted with impunity. Nobody, you know, he was accountable to nobody. Who cares who did it? I mean, is the outrage of the world because they feel duped by these agents? Is it because they don't understand how Dubai security failed? This doesn't look like a Mossad operation, frankly. I mean, why would the Mossad jeopardize its own citizens by forging passports? Certainly, this guy had plenty of, enemies outside of Israel. Mossad is usually cooler and more undercover than this.
Shira, we've got the perspective. Let us pick it up. Ronan, first to you. Shira says she doesn't understand the outrage of the world. Do you?
Well, as a journalist, I do. As an Israeli, I find these stands to some extent a hypocrisy. The United States has been conducting assassinated killings, especially since September 11. Nobody says anything about, and with all good reason. For example, 3 months ago, Ali Salah Nabahan, a senior Al-Qaeda operative in Somalia, was taken out by a commando unit that didn't even use false passport. They just landed, they killed him, they landed, they verified the killing and then took some DNA samples. The British MI6 used false passport to kill someone in Gibraltar not long ago, and I can continue with the list. But the fact remains, and nobody is going to change the rule of the game. The world demands Israel to obey to certain rules, and when Israel doesn't, or when it's being caught with its hand in the cookie jar, then the world is furious. And I can just be sorry for that, but this is the game, and I think that it doesn't matter. She said that it's not sure that it's Mossad, but it doesn't matter. The matter is everybody thinks it's Mossad. Sure, it's Mossad.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the assassination in Dubai of a high-placed Hamas leader, a killing widely presumed at this point to have been carried out by Israel. Nobody knows. They won't confirm or deny. But Dubai says 99, maybe 100% sure. We're looking at that killing and its effect. Ronan Bergman has joined us from Tel Aviv, author of The Secret War with Iran, an intelligence and military analyst high-placed in Israel journalistic circles. Paul Miguel has joined us from Washington, chief correspondent, former editor of Australia's Sydney Morning Herald, and author of Kill Khalid, a great book about an earlier botched assassination that came out not so long ago. I want to invite one more voice into our conversation from Jerusalem. We're joined by Tobias Buck, Jerusalem bureau chief for the Financial Times. Tobias Buck, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Sam. Thanks for having me.
You've pointed out in a recent column a kind of contradiction between some of Israel's own goals and the killing. What do you see there, Tobias?
Well, it just strikes me as being quite important to put this assassination in Dubai into some diplomatic context. I think the reason why there's been such a strong backlash against it is that Israel is already on the diplomatic back foot. And this is really a result of last year's Gaza war, which has been very controversial, particularly in Europe. We've had the Goldstone report, the UN report, which charges Israel as well as Hamas with committing war crimes. And we have a very right-wing, very outspoken, very blunt government, and in particular a very undiplomatic foreign minister who keeps rubbing other governments around the world up the wrong way. And so I think part of the reason of why Israel is sort of facing such strong condemnation or such diplomatic difficulties over this incident in Dubai is precisely this background.
The background, you say that's left Israeli diplomacy on the back foot, a kind of Britishism, meaning what, off-kilter, off-balance, disadvantaged?
Yes, exactly. There's a sort of sense that Israel is being sort of besieged or attacked from all sides, that you have both sort of at a grassroots level, again, more in Europe than in the U.S., at a grassroots level, you have sort of efforts to boycott Israeli products. We've had many incidents in which Israeli speakers at universities around the world, in fact, have been sort of harangued and attacked and disturbed. But also on the sort of government-to-government level, things aren't looking that great. I mean, the European Union certainly is sort of inching away a little bit from Israel, and that's what I mean by being on the back foot. Yes.
Turkey, not very happy with Israel lately. A U.S. congressional delegation not happy just last week, I guess, about its visit to Israel.
Yes, I mean, the Turkey incident really has caused a lot of controversy here, both here in Israel and in Turkey. This sort of goes back to an incident where the deputy Israeli foreign minister invited in the Turkish ambassador and asked him to sit down on a particularly low sofa and then told the cameras to kind of pay attention to this and that this was all about humiliating the Turkish ambassador. This, of course, caused a huge outcry in Turkey. The Israeli government was forced to apologize and so forth. And obviously, Turkey is one of the very few Muslim nations with which Israel has used to have a good and strong relationship. So endangering this particular tie didn't go down too well here in Israel. And then we had the case of a congressional delegation from Washington coming here. They were traveling with a group called J Street, which is a sort of left-leaning Jewish lobby group based in Washington, which is seen as too friendly here by the Israeli government, and so as a result of that, foreign ministry officials declined to meet this delegation.
Led by Congressman William Delahunt out of Massachusetts.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so you see that even with regard to these two absolutely vital relationships that Israel enjoys with Ankara and with Washington, even there, there seems to be a sort of carelessness in how to uphold and nurture these kind of crucial relationships.
But how do you weigh, Tobias, the material threat alleged here, weapons and all the rest apparently going into Gaza, against the diplomatic dictates or needs?
Well, it would seem to me that looking at past incidents in which Israel assassinated Palestinian or Lebanese militants or is believed to have assassinated such people, more often than not, they were replaced by people who were either just as competent or even more radical than before. I mean, I don't see that the campaign of assassinations against Hamas, for example, has materially weakened the group. I mean, I'm talking now about the long term. I mean, I'm mm-hmm. sure that Mr. Al-Mabou will be sorely missed, and that it'll have an impact on the group's ability to get weapons into Gaza and so forth. But I don't actually see that there is any long term strategic gain from such assassinations. At the same time, I think there is a long term strategic loss for Israel that comes from being perceived as the bully of the region.
Tobias Buck, Jerusalem Bureau Chief for the Financial Times, joining us from Jerusalem. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks.
Let's get a call from Fairlawn, New Jersey, and Frank. Frank, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. With all due respect to your guests, I think that the notion that this was some sort of blunder or mistake by the Mossad is an absurdity. I have not, in my lifetime, ever seen an assassination, a political assassination, gain such media attention into the details of the operation as this one. And it seems to me that this was a deliberate act done openly and notoriously as part and parcel of an effort by the Israeli government to gain over a gradual period of time acceptance for its practices, including assassinations just like this one.
Let's put it to our crew. Ronan Bergman, what do you say?
Look, I don't know who was behind the assassination, and according to Israeli law, even if I knew, I couldn't tell you. But being an Israeli, of course, I'd be happy if Frank was right and it was done on purpose. But I would make a comparison between what one alleged success of Mossad, and this is the assassination of the supreme military commander of Hezbollah, Imad Munia, in Damascus in February 2008, which was a tribute to Mossad, which achieved the deterrence that Israel is so much trying to gain by deterring the other side, which put Hezbollah into a tight spot, trying to retaliate and failing to retaliate his death, losing the tactical and strategic value of this genius devil, Imad Munia. This is one case, but no one was able to photograph the perpetrators. Nobody was able to point out who are they, except for general suspicion that they are Mossad. Mossad, this is one example. The other example is the current Dubai assassination, which is causing an international fury towards Israel. So I wouldn't think that if Israel was behind that, that anyone expected or calculate this overwhelming international response.
Paul, what do you say? Maybe Israel wanted to hang it out there and let it be seen, our caller says.
No, I just don't see how that works. I mean, Israel has been assassinating people for a long time. It knows how to do the business, and it knows how to do it effectively. There's absolutely nothing to be gained in the risk of burning 25-plus agents. There's nothing to be gained by the Mossad, if it wants to have a bit of fun in front of the cameras, putting the whole Israeli diplomatic effort around the world in difficulty. One of the things that... The other mistake that the Mossad made here is that we keep hearing, and Ronan rightly praised the Dubai authorities for their ability to pull this together, and you might compare what the Dubai authorities did with the failure by the American authorities, the different elements of the American authorities that had information on the so-called underwear bomber, who couldn't all bring their stuff into one story about this guy to stop him entering the country. In this case, the Dubai authorities were able to bring all the information together, and the point that seems to have been missed by the Mossad was they did it before. In 2008, there was a celebrated murder case in Dubai. An Egyptian billionaire had his Lebanese lover knocked off. Mm-hmm. And celebrated right across the region, not just in Dubai, was the manner in which the Dubai authorities cracked the case. And what they did was they put all the CCTV footage together and built it into a single incontrovertible story of what had happened. But for anyone, any of your callers calling in saying that, you know, this is the Mossad doing what it's doing, no intelligence agency likes to have 27 minutes of itself being ridiculed on YouTube right around the world forever.
We've got web comments here from our website. Ed says, no one knows who did this. It could have been Fatah, he says. However, why is there no concern or outrage that this murderer, he's referring to the Hamas leader, was living in plain view in Dubai for years? Dubai was never going to deliver, essentially, this man, Ed says. On the other hand, Michael says, since this is not an act of terrorism, murder, or breaks the law, I guess Iran can send people to America to take out former Shah supporters, or Russia can take out Chechnya's former leaders, or Arab countries can start sending people to be killing Israeli officials. Ronan, do you see that risk? I mean, this isn't the first time it's been done, but does it make this open season?
No, I don't think so. I think that the issue of targeted assassination that has been discussed here in the show before, mm-hmm. whether does it worth it, does it have an effect, and the, of course, the moral and the international judicial dilemma are ongoing. Israel has a policy of being efficiently and ruthless in using this. Sometimes it helps, sometimes it doesn't help. And I still think that most countries in the world, while being in a much lesser and diminished threat than Israel from proliferation of non-conventional warfare and terrorism, would not likely to use this sort of weapon against terrorism.
Let's get a call here from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and Yvette. Yvette, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
How's everyone?
Well, what do you see, Yvette?
I actually agree with and understand a caller from earlier where she made the comment that this was a known terrorist. I do have some issues with the UN. I understand we have to have UN rules and regulations so that we do not destroy the world. I could understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, this was a terrorist, and this wasn't just a citizen that, you know, someone had someone, their lover knocked off, this, that, and the other. This was a known terrorist, and I believe that if the United States could have even taken these same type of actions before 9/11 because they had so much intelligence information that there could have been thousands and thousands of lives that could have been saved. So morally, I am in conflict with this situation as far as what is wrong and what is right.
Mm-hmm.
But as an American, I feel like if something like this had been done, we could have avoided a lot because everyone knows that the spy games are real, the war games are real. It's no shock to anyone that there are assassinations going on a day-by-day basis.
Yvette, we've got it, and I appreciate your perspective. Our time is short. Let me get one more call, and we'll look at it. Thanks for calling. Sam in Natick, Massachusetts, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Tom, thank you very much for taking this untouchable topic that no one will talk, even the most renowned press. Here is my question. My question is, yes, this guy is bad. This guy is no good, who was murdered, obviously. But two wrongs cannot make a right. And there are wide variety of implications of Palestinians, which complicates Abbas' efforts to make peace. So that peace is dead because nobody in Arab world will look at Abbas when his agents were involved in this, number one. And number two, passport is the most important document of any country, any nation, the identity of any nation. Adulteration of passport, never mind that of Britain, the first world. I mean, it's bizarre. It's bizarre. And to complicate this thing further, we are in a situation where we are trying to deal with Iran and their nuclear effort. So how, which Arab nation, which Muslim country now will support any effort to disarm Iran? Nobody. When you have their passport being used, so how can, you know, anybody justify that? This guy is no good.
Yeah, Sam, the stakes are high, no question about it. Thank you for your call. Paul, how about it? Two wrongs don't make a right, and the U.S. has been looking for cooperation on Iran, no doubt Israel perhaps too. Does this factor in there?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the issues here is that Israel is a sovereign nation in the Middle East, but it is not the only player in the region. And to the extent that the entire world, America in particular, is involved in trying to stabilize, not always successfully, and not always even cleverly, the region, Israel can't go lashing out, which is what it has effectively done here. And to the extent that it has lashed out, it has done it by stuffing up. I mean, Dubai authorities probably upped the ante in terms of the amount of information they released on this, because this is not the first time that Dubai has been used as a theater for international assassination. The Russians came after a Chechen leader in Dubai not so long ago. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they wanted to send a message about using Dubai as a killing field, if you like.
Ronan Bergman, last word goes to you. What lesson do you think the Israeli government will take from all this, looking on and perhaps more?
This guy was a well-known terrorist, belonged to a designated terrorist organization by the U.S. government and many European, or most of European governments. He was supplying weapons to Gaza that would help killing women and children. So on the moral basis, I think that nothing would change from the perspective of Israel. However, in such a sensitive timing, when the U.S. government is trying to align the world into one consensus, together with Russia, China is out of it, unfortunately, but together with Russia, in implying surrogate sanctions on Iran, maybe it was a miscalculated timing is everything, and this was a mistake.
We're very grateful to each of you for being with us to dig into all this today. Absolutely fascinating. Ronen Bergman joining us from Tel Aviv with Yediot Aharonot and with Israel's Channel 1 TV with the show Erev Hadash there, author of The Secret War with Iran. Ronen, thank you for taking the time today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me, Tom. Thank you very much.
And Paul McGeough, author of Kill Khalid, The Failed Mossad Assassination on Khalid Mashal and the Rise of Hamas, chief correspondent and former editor of Australia's Sydney Morning Herald, joining us today from Washington, D.C. Paul, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Tom. It was a pleasure.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.